Bringing you everything under the Disney umbrella. Network 1901.
Everyone, welcome back to another episode of Lipstick and Lightsabers. I am one of your hosts, Shannon.
And I'm your other host, Alex.
And today, I hope everybody did their homework, made some tinfoil hats, because we are going to be talking about the Disney live-action remakes and how they have been predicting the sequel trilogy. But before we get into that, we did get some really interesting news for May the 4th last week with all of the Road to Nine books. And I think Alex and I just screamed for like a full 30 minutes incoherently.
Yeah, I was like typing in full caps, like Shannon, and banging pots and pans, like, hello, where are you? Like, this news just dropped. Where are you? And I was just like freaking out by myself. And my boyfriend was sitting beside me and I just kept gasping. And he's like, what are you freaking out about? And I'm like, there's books coming. They're all announced. The whole Journey to Nine is announced.
Oh my gosh. Well, like, I had sat down to like do my makeup. And, like, my phone kept buzzing, but I did, like, one eye, and then I was like, all right, what's happening? And I got off, like, I literally sat there for, like, 30 minutes with one eye done. I just couldn't. I, like, killed my phone battery. I just, man, these Road to Nine books are going to be crazy. Like, the fact that we're going to get a YA book about a new Force user, who is this person? I don't understand. Like, what?
And we're huge fans of the books, and we read, I mean, not all of them because there's too many to keep up with, but we read so many of them. So this is like, I mean, it's not episode 9 level of excitement, but it's like, it's priority for us, these books. So
it was
a really good surprise that we got the announcement yesterday, because I had it listed down that we were going to get this announcement during San Diego Comic-Con, because that's where we got it for The Last Jedi, so I still thought we had a while. It was a great surprise.
Well, and I feel like we've read, or at least recently, there's always an adult book and a YA book that comes out, and the novelization for each film. Mm-hmm. There's obviously going to be some other things kind of mixed in, but for this, I'm excited for the YA book, but I'm a little iffy about the author. But actually, the adult book has me really excited because it's a female author who's won a lot of awards. Yeah. And she's actually written a lot of YA as well. So, and she's a Kylo Ren stan.
Wait, she is? Is mm-hmm. this one a Rebecca Runhorse?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know she was a Kylo stan.
She's the one who tweeted that she squeed when Kylo Ren stabbed that guy with the side of his lightsaber.
Okay, so this is good. Okay, yeah, this is the one that includes Finn. Than this adult mm-hmm. novel, because there was one book that was Poe, Rey, and Rose and didn't say anything about Finn, and I thought that was strange.
Yeah, that's the, so there's a middle grade book that was announced as well, Spark of Hope, Spark of Resistance.
That's the Justina Ireland book, right?
Yeah, that's the one that doesn't have Finn, but it is going to have Rey and
Spark
Rose.
Spark of the Resistance.
Yeah. I'm interested in the fact that it doesn't have Finn because, like, Rey, Rose, and Poe is a very
interesting
different
dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that we've both read Justina Ireland's YA novel Dread Nation. I love that book so much.
It's a like, fantastic book.
Yeah. She was a priority to meet for me at Celebration. Like, I was so excited that I got to, you know, like, meet her and take a picture with her and tell her about that book. But she's also written Lando's Luck, which is another middle grade book. And it's really short, but it's really good. And it actually introduces a new female character in it who really does remind me a lot of Rose in personality. So I think it's going to be a really good story.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that this Rebecca Runhorse book is called Resistance Reborn. It mm-hmm. kind of ties in with The Rising, and then we know that, is it the Polish title of episode 9 is something like Rebirth of Skywalker or
something like that.
Resurrection of Skywalker. So they're really pushing.
They're really playing into it. Yeah. Well, and Matt Martin said that these books, along with the Galaxy's Edge tie-in novels, which I think start dropping around August, we're really going to get a good look at a portion of the time jump. I still think it's only a year. But
I think he was kind of backpedaling when he
said that.
Yeah, because so he said something about a portion of a year of like, I guess, between episode 8 and 9.
Yeah.
And then someone asked him and was like, well, does that mean the time jump is a year? And he said something like, no, like, that's not what I was implying. But
I think that's what
he was kind of backpedaling when he realized someone, like, he probably said something that he shouldn't have, but who knows?
Yeah. He's also going to post a timeline of, like, how the books fit together, which, I mean, we're going to get anyway because there's always a timeline at the front of each book. But that has me really excited because we've been talking about that a lot, about how much Batu is going to definitely tie in, and Galaxy's Edge will tie into The Rise of Skywalker. We both think that the movie is going to start out there. You did extensive research on the trees.
They're skinny trees.
They are skinny trees.
The trees on Endor are very, very wide. So I don't think it's Endor. I think we will be going to Endor, but I don't think those seeds are Endor. Oh, I was going to say about the timeline Matt Martin said he was doing. We don't actually get the full timeline with the Del Rey books because they only put their books on that timeline.
That's true.
And a lot of these books are actually Lucasfilm Press, like the Disney Lucasfilm Press, and then Marvel. So it'll be nice to see it from Matt.
Definitely. Yeah, all of the YA books are Disney Press instead of Del Rey. So that'll be really exciting. And we'll be talking about those books as they're released, especially the Galaxy's Edge books, because those will be coming out well before episode 9. I'm really excited about the art book, that awesome Reylo cover that's on it. But yeah, it's about to be a really exciting time for Star Wars. So just get hype. And like, you can keep getting hype because Alex has a very interesting theory. I'm going to let her kick this off.
Okay. So this is what this whole episode is about. I don't know. How did I, like, come across this idea?
I mean, it's something that we had kind of talked about before because of things that JJ had said, just ways that, like, we're like, this is obviously this thing. But I think, like, when the Lion King trailer came out.
Yeah. Because we've always, like, I mean, other podcasts have covered the similarities between the sequel trilogy and Beauty and the Beast, but I think that Lion King trailer dropped, and I was like, wait a second, there are similarities between the Lion King and the sequel trilogy, and I don't mean just the Lion King 2, because I know some people have covered that also. I mean just, like, the first Lion King. And I also noticed in the Rise of Skywalker trailer that the voiceover kind of reminded me of Mufasa talking to Simba. So I started kind of just stewing on this idea with my tinfoil hat on. And I realized, I'm like, you know what? Like, The Lion King is coming out a few months before episode 9. I'm like, that's interesting. It's like they're preparing us for for episode 9. And I started thinking, I'm like, wait a second. Beauty and the Beast, the live action, came out a few months, well, maybe like 6 months, half a year before The Last Jedi. I'm like, that's interesting. And then I'm like, is this a pattern? So I look up, I'm like, I wonder what live-action movie came out before The Force Awakens. And it was the live-action Cinderella. And then that's when all the cogs in my head started turning. And I went galaxy brain. So I have come up with this whole tinfoil hat theory that each sequel trilogy movie is basically, like, it kind of loosely follows the Disney live-action film that was released in that same year.
Yes. Yeah, like, they're almost predicting and, like, getting us ready for what we're going to see in Star Wars, which is really crazy. So this episode is going to have 3 parts, or I guess technically 4, since we talked about the books a little bit. But we're going to talk about Cinderella and The Force Awakens, then Beauty and the Beast and The Last Jedi, and then we'll get into a little bit more predictions with The Lion King and Aladdin with The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, Aladdin's a little bit of a bonus section.
Yeah, and I guess we'll talk about it there. Yeah. But, you know, the poster, there's some things, you know, it's happening. It's happening. But let's get started first with Cinderella. And I think one of the main reasons why, like, this connection can be drawn is actually J.J. said, and I think it was in the commentary for The Force Awakens, which unfortunately you can only get if you have the 3D version of the movie, which is super dumb.
It's on SoundCloud, though. If you want to just listen to the audio track, it's really, really easy to just Google it. It's on SoundCloud.
Oh, good.
It's like it's the full length of the movie. It's like 2.5 hours.
We better get all the bonus features like we did for The Last Jedi for Rise of Skywalker. But he said, for example, we looked at it like a Western or a fairy tale. What are the elements that you're going to see that make it this genre, this specific genre? And clearly, in a Western, you're going to have the dusty main street, the saloon. You're going to have cowboys. You're going to have the bad guy who's probably dressed in black. You're going to have a castle and a prince and a princess if you're looking at a fairy tale. We wanted to give these sort of fundamental, not cosmetic, but sort of prerequisite elements, these locations in which we can set our new story and our new characters. But I think that this quote is really interesting because he's talking about how he wants to set up this fairy tale, but maybe not have it like too obvious that it's a fairy tale, but we still get those elements.
Yeah.
And then he went on to say that, and the idea of this scene is she's drawn to something, and he's talking about on Tokodana, she's drawn to something and you don't know quite what it is. As soon as we discover that what she's drawn to is the Force, but it's this scene that she is drawn to this place, almost like Cinderella, and she goes to this box, which when she opens, she discovers something that, of course, has no meaning to her. So JJ is already very clearly saying, like, this is a Cinderella story, Rey is Cinderella. You can look at this whole scene on Tokodana and it's literally a castle. She literally runs from the castle like Cinderella fleeing the ball. And if you watch the live action Cinderella, there's just a lot of similarities to draw here.
Yeah, and there's more similarities than I initially thought, because at first I made some really brief notes on each film. And then I went in and I rewatched them. And Cinderella, the live action Cinderella, is by far my favorite Disney live action. It's a really, really strong movie. It really supplements the original, because I love all the original animated versions of all these movies. This one just, it lets the animated one breathe and be its own movie and doesn't step on it. But then it becomes its own movie and it adds things and it's really great. So I rewatched this movie and I saw things that I never saw before, and I just love the movie even more because of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that this movie also was just perfectly cast. Like,
yeah.
They really, in my opinion, they really hit it out of the park with Cinderella. And the other ones, like, they're good, but Cinderella is just really its own kind of movie.
Yeah, I always come back to this one. It's so easy to watch and just, like, kind of be brought into that world. Like, just, it's so easy to sympathize with Ella. And even the way they portray Lady Tremaine, there's times where you're sympathizing with her a bit too. The actress that played Lady Tremaine, like, she just was so great in the role, and like it was so easy to sympathize with all the characters in the remake.
Yeah, well, and I like that they went on this theme of, like, Cinderella, you know, she has that message from the very beginning to have courage and be kind, and she's always nothing but kind to her stepmother. And, like, at the end of that movie, her stepmother kind of finally sees this, and you can see it, like, all over their faces, and how, you know, like, Lady Tremaine, like, kind of had her life turned upside down too, and she allowed it to make her bitter, and she became closed off, unlike Cinderella. And they really collide in a very interesting way by the end of that film.
At the beginning of the movie, you see Ella go through trauma. Like, she loses her mom, and then she loses her dad also. And I wouldn't say that Rey's trauma is the same, because Ella had very, very loving parents. But the trauma is what impacts both of our characters, like, the most for their stories. And neither of them want to leave that place where their parents left them, basically. And Ella doesn't want to leave that house because she wants to cherish the place that her parents were so happy. So it's, and it's the same with Ray. Like, she doesn't want to leave Jakku because she thinks they're going to come back to her.
Yeah, I think that's really where you can draw the similarities here, is that they both get stuck in this situation and in this environment, and they both have the power to leave, but they just won't do it because of reasons that connect back to that traumatic event of their parents leaving their lives, regardless of how that happened. And I think with Cinderella, and you have this here, that have courage and be kind, that was something that her mother told her, and she wants to stay here because, like, this would have made her mother happy. This is where they were happy once. It makes her think of her father, all of that kind of stuff. And with Ray, she kind of has a little bit of that have courage and be kind as well. Like, yes, she did grow up in this really rough environment, and she can be really, you know, like, strong and tough when she has to. But you see that when she takes in BB-8, how she just has this compassion for other, I mean, BB-8 is not necessarily a living thing, but other sentient things. And we see in Before the Awakening, Rey just is a dreamer, and she's just kind of loving life. And even though she's not the most trusting, she does kind of fall in with another group of individuals and kind of lets them in, and they do double cross her in the end. But she is kind of showing that, like, even though the world is being unkind to me, it doesn't mean I have to be unkind to the world.
I would say you could really compare that story in Before the Awakening with those two scavengers that she ends up trusting, and then they betray her. You can really compare that to the way Ella treats her stepsisters and then how they treat her.
Yeah, because it's like they're technically on the same level, but it is that kind of difference in thinking and that difference in interacting with the world that sets them off on different paths. And if you haven't read Before the Awakening, highly recommend it. It's a pain train. just every single story in it. But seeing Rey, you know, like, have this longing and, like, doing these flight simulators and building this ship, but then never having any intention of leaving is just very, it's heartbreaking. And I think you do really see that in Cinderella, because Cinderella has those means as well to leave, but she won't do it. And she just stays there and continues to be with these people. That also comes in with the loneliness. They're both extremely isolated. They don't have any friends or any close friends, and they just keep themselves busy to kind of distract themselves. So, like, Cinderella, even though she is being treated as a servant, I think you can definitely say that she's throwing herself into the work to distract herself. And, like, Rey's the same way. She's constantly scavenging. She's constantly building. She's constantly doing something to keep, you know, the silence away.
And I would say Cinderella isn't as lonely in the animated version, because the mice actually talk to her. They talk back to her. And in the live action, they call her Jacqueline in the live action. It's a girl mouse now. But they don't necessarily really talk to her. They interact with her a bit, but it's not the same.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Like, in the animated form, she does have, like, friends per se. And that's one thing that I did like with the live action. They went there, but they didn't, like, go there, you know? So it's like they had it just enough to be nostalgic, but not enough where, you know, like in Beauty and the Beast, it was full-blown, you know, talking teacups and everything. Here, you pulled out a quote: had she never run to the forest, she never would have met the prince. And that takes us right to Tokodana.
But, like, that's The Force Awakens.
It's literally The Force Awakens.
Wow.
I don't know. Tell me about Ella and Kit meeting in the forest.
So they meet in the forest, and they kind of just, like, hover around each other, and they kind of, like, they're kind of quippy at each other. And, like, I mean, the Rey Kylo meetup isn't as soft as that. It's not. But we kind of see them putting up these walls, and Kit definitely does that in the forest. He is trying to separate himself from the prince, and he's like, no, I'm Kit. I'm not I'm not the prince. I'm just a normal kid, right? Like, and Kylo is kind of like he's left Ben behind. So they're both struggling with these two different identities. And as soon as Kylo sees Rey, he's not interested in the droid anymore. And Kit also becomes completely disinterested in anything else or anyone else because he's supposed to marry a princess. And once he's met Ella, it doesn't, no one else matters anymore.
I know, it's, to me, like, that's one of the big things is that, like, in the fairy tale, when the prince meets, you know, our heroine in the forest, they become completely consumed by, like, who the heck is this girl? Like, I have to know. I have to know everything about her. They become obsessed with it. You see that in Sleeping Beauty as well, which we're not talking about Sleeping Beauty, but, you know, the forest fight on Starkiller is very reminiscent of the dancing scene.
And I wouldn't say, so there's one scene where he's speaking to the captain of the guard about Ella, about this mystery girl. And the captain of the guard says something along the lines of what does it matter kind of thing. Like, it's just some random girl. And it kind of reminds me of that scene where Kylo's like, we have the girl, we have everything. And like Hux is kind of like, what?
I know, he just like looks at him and just like, okay, sure. It's like when this goes south, just remember, he gave it all up for a girl. And I also think one of the big themes in Cinderella is this other quote, perhaps the greatest risk any of us will ever take is to be seen as we really are. That's something both of these characters, when they meet in the forest, Ella is kind of leaving that like her horrible past behind, and she's just being Ella in that moment. Kit is trying to like, you know, I'm not the prince, I don't have these responsibilities, I'm just Kit. Like, they haven't really been seen. Well, actually, in this moment, they're actually trying to be like, this is the real me, not all of this other stuff that's going to get bogged down. Exactly. Yeah. And I think with The Force Awakens, it's almost the opposite in that you're seeing all of the baggage. Like, Kylo Ren has become his baggage, you know? And he's kind of he thinks that he's left, like, his legacy and everything behind, but really that's just bogging him down even more. And so I think to be seen as we really are, that's the Force bond coming in.
Yeah, we see that in The Last Jedi for sure. They finally, that Hutt scene is when they see who they are as people.
That Hutt scene.
And the other comparison we've made for a very long time is that Maz Kanata is the fairy godmother.
Oh, definitely.
We've been talking about that forever, though. Mm-hmm. About how she's the perfect fairy godmother.
She's the fairy godmother. She basically, if there's ever like a character that is working behind the scenes to get the two main characters together, it's Maz. Maz totally ships it. Like, she just does. Is there anything else that you want to talk about with Cinderella before we move on to Beauty and the Beast?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I like the my queen, my kit.
I know, that's the last lines of the movie. My queen, my kit. I'm like, oh. That's going to be like episode 9.
God, that movie is
when Rey says my Ben.
Oh, stop. All right. Well, with that being said, we are going to move in to The Beauty and the Beast and The Last Jedi. And like Alex said, like a lot of people have talked about the similarities between Beauty and the Beast and The Last Jedi. It's very apparent, especially knowing that Rian Johnson is such a huge fan of Phantom of the Opera, which is also a Beauty and the Beast type of story. But if you watch the 2017 Beauty and the Beast, specifically thinking about The Last Jedi, so many things jump out at you. I like flipped out watching this movie the other day. Because I love Beauty and the Beast. I'm not a huge fan of the live action just because I wish it had been more like Cinderella and trying to be its own movie instead of going like full blown, we're doing every single musical number exactly the way it's supposed to be. I wish it could have been a little bit more its own movie. But there are just a lot of things that kind of jump out. Like Belle talks about escaping into books. And I think that really mirrors how Rey escapes into like flight simulators, because she can kind of envision, and she even has like these fantasies in Before the Awakening about like flying to all of these other planets. So like she's not just playing a flight simulator, like this is her flying to other planets and like seeing other worlds. And I think that's definitely Belle reading these books. The difference here being is that Belle does want to leave and have adventures. Like, she doesn't want to stay in this one place. And Rey never entertains those fantasies. Those are just fantasies to her, like, to the point where she thinks it's ridiculous to even try to leave.
But I think Belle's still tied down by her dad. She has these fantasies, but in the end, she stays.
Well, like, that's why she hasn't left, because just like Cinderella, she's fully capable of leaving, but she would never leave her father. And an interesting side note is just that Belle and Ben are both INFPs, which I think is really interesting. A lot of these, you can almost swap the roles. You see that a lot with Aladdin, too, where it's like in some ways one is Rey and in other ways they're actually Ben. And it's very interesting that this kind of emerges here as well.
Oh my gosh. And this note you made about Poe being Lumiere and Hux's Cogsworth.
They are. So Alex and I are also, we love Storm Pilot, but we also ship Ginger Pilot.
Yeah, I really like Ginger Pilot a lot.
It's a really fun ship. like Storm Pilot is really soft and Ginger Pilot is just so... it's just so fun. It's just great. And like, I kept watching this and I'm like, Lumiere is obviously Poe, but Cogsworth is not Finn. Like, if anybody is Finn, it's Chip. And Mrs. Potts is Maz. Just these two together. Like, I like it. I like the dynamic.
And right now, Kate's writing What's Your Damage, and she's writing Ginger Pilot in it.
She is a Ginger Pilot hero. Like... I love it, because she wrote something else that had, it was the AU for her other fic, Play to Win. Yeah. There was Ginger Pilot in that, too. And, like, I like it, because then, you know, you can still have Finn Rose, which I like. Mm-hmm. It's so cute.
And then
so
you have another enemies to lovers in there, too.
Yes, it's so good. But something else is that the Beast in the live action, unlike in the animated version, lives in eternal winter. And that is very similar to Ben Solo's situation, always living in space and on Star Destroyers. Starkiller Base is literally like a snowy planet. And the Beast, even until Belle like comes into his life, he talks about how like it's like he wasn't seeing beauty in anything anymore. And I think with Ben Solo, you almost see that too, like with the Forspawn. It's like, yeah, you can't see their surroundings, but it's almost like she's shining a light into areas that like maybe he hadn't really noticed or had started to neglect.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I was going to add to that you always see him in this like really like stark isolation in The Last Jedi, like just like him like looking out into space through like windows and and him in his bedroom where it's just like very flat colors and angles. And then in the one scene where they open up to each other, the majority of that scene is shot in the hut, and the hut is very like warm and welcoming where his like his room isn't. So I love that Ryan showed us finally, like, the warmth coming into his winter.
Well, and it even, like, the light from the fire starts to show, like, on his face, too. Like, it's, and I think in that moment he was, like, there.
Yeah.
You know, because we even see that shot where, like, you see them both sitting on either side of the fire. So I wonder if when they touched hands, like, he was pulled into her world.
Yeah.
Which I definitely think happens in Beauty and the Beast. Like, the more the Beast is allowed to interact with Belle and the more he's allowed to kind of learn more about her, the more they kind of, like, their worlds come together and his becomes not so isolating anymore. Mrs. Potts drops a lot of knowledge. She says, you can't judge people by who their father is, and somewhere deep in his soul, there is a prince waiting to be set free. Like, hello?
Yeah, and, like, the thing is, in the films, they never address Ben necessarily being royalty, but they do in Bloodline. They do address it a bit because he's kind of offered position as royalty on a planet, and it's kind of like, here, remember, he is royalty, guys. Even though we don't see it everywhere, like, don't forget, I love those lines.
Well, was it Ryan or JJ who said he's standing here looking like some sort of prince?
JJ.
Yeah, JJ. Those fairy tale quotes. he was really lending on those fairy tales. Oh, there was another scene as well when, so we get to learn a lot more about the Beast's backstory in the live action version, which was very, it was interesting. I'm not sure. I wish we kind of gotten like a little bit more. I'm not 100% sure about it, but we learned that the Beast had like a really hard home life. His father was really hard on him. But if you take that quote another way, so she says, took that sweet, innocent lad and twisted him up to be just like him, and we did nothing to stop it. I think knowing that the darkness had been preying on Ben for his entire life, like you could say that the darkness, whether that was Snoke or Palpatine, took this sweet, innocent boy and twisted him up, and the people around him were just powerless to stop it because they either weren't paying attention or the darkness scared them too much, and they, you know, in a way allowed it to happen. And I think about Leia in that moment when she says, you know, like, no, it was Snoke. Like, I want my son back. Like, all that kind of stuff.
I'm speechless.
It's
I'm getting
lot.
Emotional over this.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, man. We haven't even gotten to Evermore yet. That's the real emotions. Like, let's talk about Evermore for a minute.
It's on our Raylo playlist.
Yeah, it's on our Raylo playlist. If you haven't listened to Evermore and thought about the end of The Last Jedi, do it, and then you'll cry for forever, basically.
Just put that last scene, the last Force Bond in The Last Jedi, and then turn on Evermore.
Yep.
And just cry.
Yep. It's because he's singing about how, like, they put this song in right when he lets Belle go to go save her father. There's a song in the play, actually, that I think that they were kind of being inspired by. In the play, it is, like, really angsty. It's still angsty in the movie, but it's not nearly as bad. But he's singing about how, like, she'll be with him forever, even though he's, like, let her go, and that he'll be waiting for her, basically, forevermore to come back to him. And it's so sad. He talks about how, you know, like, even as she fades from view, she will still torment me, calm me, hurt me, move me, come what may. Like, it's so Ben. But in this scene, we have the Beast on top of his tower looking out over this frozen kingdom, and you can see Belle riding away on horseback, and she's in her gold gown, and she looks like a light. Like, she's the only light in this whole landscape, and she's leaving the Beast. And it just makes me think of Rey being like a literal ray of light.
Yeah.
Being that light that's like trying to pull Ben back.
And I love in that scene, even though it's so sad, the Beast is coming to terms with and accepting that she's leaving.
Yeah. He's understanding that, like,
yeah,
he loves her and he has to let her do this. Like, he can't make her stay. Mm-hmm. And I think in this moment is when he has really come back from his selfishness, because if he was still being selfish, he would have made her stay for fear that she would never come back. And that's actually something that they talk about in Master and Apprentice, how wanting to control the future stems from fear of losing people that you love. And so we see that with Anakin, like, he refuses to, like, let go of Padme because he's so afraid that he's going to lose her, and that comes back to bite him. So, like, if the Beast had made Belle stay, he would have still lost her. So this is like a huge, like, growth in his character, allowing her to leave. And I think Ben Solo hasn't quite learned that yet. We see that obviously in The Last Jedi.
I think, but he's getting there. We'll see that more in the first act of episode 9, maybe.
I hope so.
I was going to say the other thing that's interesting is the mirror, and the way they see each other through the mirror is very reminiscent of the Force Bond also.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Oh, I almost forgot, too. There's a scene right before this that's not in the original. It's not in the stage show, where they are in the library, and I don't know if they're using the mirror or if they're using just something else that's in the library. I can't remember. To actually go into Belle's memories, and they visit the Paris from her childhood. And to me, that was so Force Bond of, like, Ben seeing her past, like, mm-hmm. when they touched hands, and gaining that understanding from her. I think that was another turning point for the Beast. Like, as he learned more about this girl, he was able to open himself up. Their relationship was allowed to soften and they, you know, became closer. The biggest thing from this movie was at the very end, because the Beast says, "I am not a beast." And that's really huge, because at the beginning of this movie, like, he won't even go by his name. He's just like, "I'm the Beast. Like, I am a beast. Like, this is who I am. I'm a monster." Very much like Kylo Ren does in The Last Jedi. And I wonder if in 9 we'll return to that. If, you know, it's like, "I said that I was a monster, but I'm not a monster." Or it's like, "I am light. I am Ben Solo." Something like that, to just, like, verbally confirm that redemption.
And then I also saw that you quoted Gaston here, where he says, "The monster has her under his spell. If I didn't know better, I'd say she even cared for him." And then there's you have a quote from The Last Jedi novel where it says, "Almost as if she cared for him." Almost word for word, the end is the same.
It is, though. And that was, that scene in the novel is after he woke back up, I think, before she did, or after she did. And he's kind of reflecting on, like, what happened in that scene. It's like, it was like almost like she cared about him. And he quickly is like, "That couldn't be true." So, like, that's how we know that, like, he's not quite there yet. But it's almost like, you know, he's got that Gaston persona living inside of him as well, telling him, like, "No, it can't possibly be this thing," like, ridiculing him for it. I wish a couple of things had been different about Beauty and the Beast, just because I think that it could have been so much better than it was. But it really did predict a lot of stuff, I feel like, that we saw in The Last Jedi. And I feel like almost everything that we're getting is just preparing us for what we're supposed to see. Because a lot of the elements that they've been introducing in the sequel trilogy, and this has been talked about in other podcasts as well, is different. It's things that we haven't really seen before in Star Wars. And they will show us things outside of the saga films to get us ready to see it. So you could almost say, like, in Solo, that is a very sexy movie. You don't really normally see that a lot, all that kissing in a saga film. And even in Resistance, there's a lot of stuff going on there with Kylo Ren as well, and just the First Order and things that we're seeing. And it's stuff that it's getting the general audience ready to see things that are going to come forward in 9, I believe.
They're setting us up to be ready. And I think The Lion King and Aladdin might be setting us up to be ready.
But will we ever be ready, though?
No.
I have to prepare.
Even though we've been new.
Yeah,
we're not ready.
Well, it's like seeing that Raylo art book cover. It's like, we've been new, but also I'm screaming. But tell us about Lion King, Alex. What do you think's happening here?
Okay, so the whole Lion King comparison came to me when I saw the 9 teaser trailer for the first time, because the voiceover, like I said, really reminded me of Mufasa talking to Simba down from, like, the heavens, right? So I want to just, like, start, like, kind of briefly at the beginning. And so The Lion King is Simba's coming-of-age story, really. And it's about him returning to his true identity. And I think that's what the sequel trilogy is about. It's about Ben's coming-of-age and his return to his true identity. And you could say the same thing for, like, Nala, too. Because there's moments where you could interchange Simba and for Ben, or Simba for Rey. And obviously, like, Nala doesn't have a huge role in the animated version, but I'll be really happy to see if Nala has a bigger role in the live action. And then that way we can, like, pull out some more comparisons with episode 9.
Well, and I think she will too, just judging by how Disney has been, like, telling their stories as of late. I think that she would be a bigger character. And it's very interesting because she forces Simba to confront his past.
Which is what Rey does.
Exactly, yeah. Like, after the death of Mufasa, all Simba does is run from it. And he just refuses to acknowledge it at all until Nala comes crashing back into his life, quite literally, and he's forced to deal with it. And that's exactly what's happening with Kylo Ren. Like, he has been running from his past. He wants to let it die, but Rey's like, you can't. You have to reconcile.
And the other thing I was going to point out, since now we have the episode 9 teaser, we know that Palpatine is somehow back. And a good comparison to The Lion King is that originally the hyenas were the speculated threat to the lions. And so was Snoke. Snoke was the speculated threat to the galaxy. But now Palpatine's the actual puppet master. And it was the same for The Lion King. Scar ended up being the puppet master of all the hyenas. So I think it's interesting to see that like almost like a diversion for both films.
Well, and you know what else? Like, Scar was very close to the royal family. Like, you know, he
Palpatine.
Was... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, Palpatine is very close to the Skywalkers, and it's a threat that I don't think they really anticipated, definitely. Yeah.
Like, I mean, Palpatine's just, like, an uncle to Anakin, just like Scar is to Simba.
Yeah, and you even made the comparison, like, during Mufasa's death, you know, Scar really manipulates Simba into saying, like, it was your fault, you have to run away, all this other stuff. Like, Palpatine does that with Anakin a little bit, and, like, we see that with Snoke, too, like, manipulating Ben into getting to that point where he'd kill his own father.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying that, like, Simba's as... like, at fault as Ben is for killing his father. Like, he's definitely not. But you definitely see those similarities of the manipulation behind the death. And then all that guilt kind of coming on to Ben and coming on to Simba. Mm-hmm. And, like, just utterly breaking them down. Another great comparison is Simba's afraid to face the past. Once he runs away and he grows up with Timon and Pumbaa, he just won't go back when Nala tries to get him to go back, because he's so afraid. And it's the same with Kylo. Like, he wants to kill the past because he's scared of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like in that moment in the throne room when Rey is worried about the fleet and he's telling her, forget all of it, let it all die, stay here with me. I think in that moment, you know, like, he couldn't go back to the resistance because he's afraid. Like, he doesn't know what's gonna happen. Like, he's wronged so many people in the resistance. There's no way they would respect him. Like, he can't do it. So that's why he has that counter offer, because it's just like, oh no, we could just stay, I can't go, that's scary. And like, that's one thing that we really like in Fix, whenever Ben Solo does eventually go back to the resistance, like, how is that dealt with? Like, is he sentenced to exile? Does he have to face a trial? All that kind of stuff. Like, Sword of the Jedi shows it in a really beautiful way. It's really interesting. I'm very interested to see how they're going to handle that in episode 9, if at all. They might save it for books. It's a very big topic.
Similarly to the Fairy Godmother, Maz has comparisons to Rafiki.
That gets even more so in Lion King 2, because Rafiki ships Kiara and Kovu so hard, to the point where they sing like a song all about love, and Rafiki is just like, yeah, kiss each other, just do it.
It's because he knows they're the answer to the balance between the two clans.
Yep. Yep, dropping that knowledge, dropping all the knowledge.
Maz knows also.
I wonder, okay, so this is kind of like a side tangent. We know that Maz has the lightsaber, we don't know how she got it. That new book is called The Force Collector, and I wonder if he gets the lightsaber and gives it to Maz. I don't know how that would work.
I'd love to see Maz show up in a book.
We need more of her, because the most we get of her is in The Force Awakens, and we get her very briefly in
Last Shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd like to know more about her. I like her being more of a mysterious character. Like, I don't think I'd ever want a story that was, like, from her
about
perspective.
Yeah. But she needs to be in other people's stories.
Yeah. She needs to come in and just, like, nudge people in the right direction. Like, she does in Last Shot. Like, she tells Han, she's like, you're being stupid. Go home. You're obviously in love. Just figure it out. I like what you said about how you're predicting a Can You Feel the Love Tonight moment, which coincidentally is also on our Raylo playlist.
I think it's gonna happen once Ben's with the Resistance and Rose, Finn, and Poe are just kind of watching from a distance, and they're basically like Timon and Pumbaa.
Catch Me, I'm Falling.
Yeah.
Catch Me, I'm Falling is a fic that Alex and I both really like, and we really think that it's going to be episode 9, or at least in some sort of fashion.
It's the Can You Feel the Love Tonight moment of episode 9.
It, yeah, it is. You also had a lot about the Force ghosts here, too, yeah. Which I think you're definitely onto something.
This is all speculation because we haven't seen episode 9 yet, so... Force ghosts, like Luke, and maybe if Anakin's there too, might say something similar to like what Mufasa says, which, here's the quote. You have forgotten who you are, and so forgotten me. Look inside yourself, Simba. You are more than what you become. You must take your place in the circle of life. So what Luke says is, we've passed on all we know. 1,000 generations live in you now, but this is your fight. We'll always be with you. No one's ever really gone. And I don't know about all the listeners, but I always think that that voiceover by Luke is him talking to Ben, and maybe Ben and Rey, but I think Ben's there.
Yeah, they really want you to think that he's talking to Rey because that voiceover starts, like, over Rey, but mm-hmm. It just makes more sense that they'd be saying this to Ben because Rey, you know, like... I guess technically, like, 1,000 generations live within her because she's kind of the legacy of the Jedi. Yeah. Like, she is the last Jedi. But it's just so much more meaningful if it's being said to Ben. And there's been a lot of speculation and theories about Force ghosts being in this. And I think recently, especially with this, some people were even predicting... almost like Avatar. There's moments in Avatar The Last Airbender where they're able to speak to, like, all of the past Avatars. They kind of all appear to them and, like, impart some wisdom, and there's been a lot of theories about that, and, like, I think that this speaks to that as well.
And I'm just gonna compare these two lines. Look in yourself, Simba. You're more than what you have become. And then the line from Luke that says, 1,000 generations live in you now, but this is your fight. We'll always be with you. And it's all about looking inside yourself and seeing the reflection of all the things that you learned from other people and bringing those out and what you learned from yourself about yourself through, like, your journey. I love it. It's so good.
Well, and there's a big moment in The Lion King, you know, while he's talking to Mufasa, and he says that, you know, like, all the past kings live within Simba, and they even say, you know, like, Mufasa lives in you, like, he lives on in you. And in Star Wars, like, we do get, like, as you pointed out, you have too much of your father's heart in you, but we also know, strike me down in anger and I will be with you forever. Like, these people never leave you. That's one of the things about the Jedi. That's why they don't fear death, because, you know, you're always with the Force, and they become one with the Force. So these people are always with you. And I do think that Rey, with her loneliness, would need to hear that, but there's not really anybody that she's lost that she would need to carry with her. Unlike Ben, who he's trying so hard to push all of these people away, but through, you know, Han and Luke and Leia and even Anakin and even Padme, like, through them all standing together, like, that's how they're gonna win the day.
It's so good.
Star Wars is so good.
Another great conversation between Simba and Rafiki, when I compare it to Ben acknowledging his past a bit. Simba says, I know what I have to do, but going back means I'll have to face my past. I've been running from it for so long. And Rafiki says, oh yes, the past can hurt, but from the way I see it, you can either run from it or learn from it. And I just love that line because especially the I know what I have to do. It's been said by Ben twice now, right? And it was said by Simba. Tinfoil hat.
They're on. Well, and if any of you have read Dooku Jedi Lost, even if you haven't, this isn't necessarily a spoiler, but there is a line where they're learning this chant, and it says that you must walk into the light, acknowledge the dark, and then find the balance in between. So, like, you can't be balanced unless you acknowledge the darkness, and that is learning from your past, that is reconciling with the traumas of the past, things that have been done to you, things that have been done to other people, and then finding that balance while still moving towards the light. And that's very much happening in this moment. And I do think that we're going to see that with Ben Solo. And I've always been wondering, like, how is that going to happen? So, like, if we're having a conversation with Ben and Luke as a Force ghost, or maybe with many Force ghosts, like, maybe this type of thing gets said. And it's just like, you have to move down this path because you have to learn from it.
I'm excited. I'm not 100% excited for this live action Lion King because I'm not sure that it's needed. But I am excited to see what they add and what kind of things will compare. What new things they'll add that might be very sequel trilogy-esque. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm very worried that it's going to be more like The Jungle Book, because The Jungle Book was not different at all.
No, like, I love the animated one. It's so cute.
And it's just, since they didn't do anything new, it's just like, why did we need this? So I hope that Lion King gives us more than just different famous people singing songs.
I'm not sure that Aladdin's going to be different either.
I had a lot of hope for Aladdin. The more I see of it, the more on the fence I am.
Yeah.
But I still have some hopes for it. I like what you said about how you don't think that Ben will, like, accept the crown like Simba does. Mm-hmm. But he's still going to go back and help, like, bring the peace.
I think the crown, he will accept something. It's not necessarily a literal crown, but he will accept the title of Skywalker. He'll accept the title of his legacy of being Ben Solo. So it's not like he's accepting the royalty necessarily, but he's accepting who he is.
He's accepting the legacy.
Mm-hmm.
That heavy emphasis on the legacy. Man, it's going to be good. It's going to be so good.
When Ben joins the resistance, I think Poe and Finn are going to react similar to Timon and Pumbaa when they react to Nala coming in. Like, they're, like, terrified at first, and then they're like, this is a bad idea. Nala shouldn't be here. She's going to eat us. So I think that's kind of, like, similar to Poe and Finn are going to initially be very scared that Kylo Ren just showed up, and they're like, oh no, he's going to eat us.
Well, and that's very Lion King too, as well. Like, everybody's afraid of Kovu, and there's that whole song where they're all, like, saying deception and disgrace at him. Like,
oh my gosh.
It's very on the nose, but I think Ben Solo can relate.
Oh, and there's one other note. Recently, Porg's Nest was on What the Force on one of their celebration recap shows, and she was talking about Ben coming home to his mother, like sons coming home to their mothers, coming home to Leia. And I think that is really like The Lion King, with Simba finally facing Sarabi, coming home to Sarabi, like knowing, being fearful of disappointing her, because he's under the impression that his mom thinks he killed Mufasa, and finally facing that. And it's a shame that Carrie Fisher isn't with us anymore, because I think if she had been with us, we were going to see more of that moment of Simba coming home to Sarabi, Ben coming home to see Leia, and like having that guilt on his shoulders lifted once Leia just wants her son back. And like you see it a bit in The Last Jedi, where especially in the novelization, Ben realizes that she's not mad at him. She's just sad. She wants him back.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, especially knowing that from the beginning, 9 was intended to be Leia's movie, why else would it be Leia's movie if it wasn't about her son coming back to her? When you think about it that way, it's like, of course redemption was always on the table, because otherwise her movie would have been the first one, you know, like us learning about her son. But instead, it's the last one. And it is super disappointing that Carrie Fisher isn't around. I know that they're going to try to do the best that they can, And I'm glad for that. And I'm glad that they're not going to try to, like, recast her just for the sake of it. I think that there is more that they could explore, though, maybe in books. I know some people have a really different definition of who can become Force ghosts, but in my mind, if you are a Force user, there's some wiggle room. I don't know.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about Aladdin. So this is more of like a bonus thing, because I think Aladdin, more than anything, is kind of, it's like an AU almost, instead of like being predictive. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people pointed this out, that the Aladdin poster actually looks a lot like the Force Awakens poster. It's staged very much in the same way. And in this, Aladdin is Rey and Jasmine is Ben. You have like Aladdin being just kind of this like scruffy street rat who knows that like there's something more out there, but he's kind of like stuck in this situation. And then you have Jasmine, who is very isolated, wants to kind of break out and defy like her parents and kind of be on her own. And I think you do see that, like the Reylo elements are there.
The other like similarity is that Aladdin's told from the future, like as a past story that happened like a long time ago, just like a long time ago in a galaxy far away. It's a legend.
Oh, 100%. And there's also Disney is very obsessed with hands, because there's a hand touch, and there's also, you know, the reaching out, like, do you trust me? Like, Ben is very Jasmine there, like, I don't know, can I?
And I've already fan casted the silencer as the magic carpet.
I love it so much.
Especially with us, someone on Twitter said that the new silencer can fit two people.
I've seen too much fan art for this. It's all I can think of. But I mean, I do think that, like, if we could have a whole new world moment on the silencer, like, I'm down for it. I'm here for that.
It'd be too much, though.
I mean, you know, whatever. I like what you said about Aladdin has two identities, just like Ben Solo does. And, like, ultimately, Jasmine is only interested in Aladdin. She doesn't really care about Prince Ali. And that's, you really see that, like, I think especially in how Daisy has been instructed to answer questions.
The way Daisy is answering questions is very, very Jasmine. It's very...
Kylo Ren, I don't
like,
know her.
Kylo Ren, who is he? Mm-hmm. And then, well, Ben, like, you, like when someone, like an interviewer will mention Ben to her, and her eyes light up.
Yeah, she's just like, you know, I don't think that she could be with Kylo Ren. It's like, well, what about Ben Solo? And she's like, oh, well, you know, Ben Solo, like, I'm here for him. It's very Jasmine and Rey. And also, Aladdin and Ben are dumb with their words. You are correct in the notes here. Poor babies. It's so funny because so many people headcanon that Ben Solo, like, writes poetry and, like, because he does calligraphy. And yet, he's really bad with his words.
And there's this one scene where Aladdin's talking about Jasmine. And he says, she's got these eyes that just, and this hair, wow, and her smile. And, like, that's just, like, I think that line is, like, about Ben. Because I mean, in the Last Jedi novelization, yes, we know that Rey wants to touch his hair. We know from that deleted scene, like, we know Adam Driver's eyes are beautiful. But even, like, Luke points it out in that deleted scene.
Yeah, it's like you sold yourself to the dark side for a pair of pretty eyes. And, like, he hasn't smiled yet, but maybe he will. We don't know.
He was smiling in the novelization.
Yeah, he, like, smirks, I think. The novelization is, like, very, like, what's going on here? Like, it's not subtle at all, and I love it. I love it for that. It's great. But I would say, in conclusion, like, it's very interesting that these live-action remakes are... I really do think you can say something for, like, they're coming out in the same year as a major Star Wars film, and they have a lot of similar beats. Granted, we do know that J.J. Abrams was very much like, this is a fairy tale, and he was very interested in Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty. So knowing that, it's very clear that it would lean on Cinderella. We do know that Rian Johnson is like a huge fan of that Beauty and the Beast, you know, like monster husband type of
Phantom
trope.
Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera, yep. But when you look at it this way and you look at it like, well, these movies also came out in the same year and you see that things like Aladdin and Lion King are coming out right now, like there are still similarities there. And like those are two where it's just like, you wouldn't be like, oh, I'm lending on this thing, because those aren't classic fairy tales. Like, Aladdin is, but not Disney's version. Disney veered very far from, like, the Thousand and One Nights Aladdin. So the fact that it's even leaning on these tropes at all is very much like, okay, well, there's gotta be something going on here. Like, let me just wear my tinfoil hat, okay?
So I think that's our conclusion to our little comparison with our live-action Disney movies.
Yeah. I mean, one other thing I will say is that Dumbo did come out this year.
I didn't see it.
I didn't either. But I do know that Jenny Nicholson apparently in a video just said that Ben Solo is like sad Dumbo.
Well, maybe if it goes on Netflix, I'll watch it. Or I'll rent it.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm still trying to watch Bumblebee. It's never on Redbox.
No. Bumblebee is so good, guys.
I want to watch it so bad. My mom's just like, why? And I'm like, because.
No, she would like it.
I know she would. I'm like, it's robot love. It's female power
and
fantasy.
It's very, like, female gaze heavy. It's a really awesome movie.
Who would have thought that in 2019, Shanna McCarter would want to watch a Transformers movie?
I don't care about Transformers whatsoever, but Bumblebee was one of the best movies of last year.
Yeah. This was something that Alex and I talked about. We were just on the Raylo Alliance for May the 4th, and we mentioned that watching movies, like, looking for Raylo makes watching movies, like, really, really fun. I'm sure most of the listeners out there probably already do that. But it adds, like, a different layer, and it makes things just all that more fun. Like, we watched Hayden Christensen's movie Little Italy, which is so bad. But, like, when you look at it, you're like, this could be a Raylo AU. It's just
it's not good, but it's entertaining.
It's so entertaining.
It's like reading a really good crack fic.
It really was. Like, I'm surprised that there hasn't been a really good crack fic Little Italy AU. Like, clearly you guys are sleeping on this movie. Just needs to happen. Or even, like, Strange Magic. Although that one's very on the nose, Raylo. Like, you can't watch it and not realize that, like, George Lucas wanted Raylo. It's just a fun time. It's Raylos always have more fun.
Yeah, I don't take myself seriously, but we have a lot of fun, so that's what matters.
All right, well, I think that is going to wrap it up for this episode. We're hoping that we get some vanity cover art soon so that we can talk about that. If not, we do have a couple of character spotlights in mind, but as always, if you do have any ideas or specific topics that you would like to hear us talk about, you can always let us know that. We're always up for anything.
I know we were asked to potentially cover Lost Stars eventually. Yeah.
I want to reread Lost Stars. Yeah. It's been a hot minute. So that's definitely doable. Mm-hmm. And then as always, too, if you want to send in your Star Wars story to be part of Lipstick and Lightsabers on Fridays, you can always email us at lipsticklightsabers1901@gmail.com. There's instructions for how to do that in the notes for every single podcast. You can find that on our website as well at network1901.com. We've got lots of merch in our Tee Public shop, which, again, the link for that is on network1901.com. You can find me at McCarter Shannon. Alex is at Alex Leonis. But I guess we will see you guys in the next one. Bye.
Bye.